Did you do some lobbying to get back out there for the protection?
Yeah, I suck. Everyone else on the team scored, except for me. No, that, you know, means a lot to me for them to keep me in at the end of the game there and try to get me that record. But hey, I'll take a huge win.
Christian McCaffrey on the effort yesterday to set the all-time record for touchdowns scored in consecutive games.
Oh, you were getting a little nervous. Don't get him started.
Don't get me started.
They're going to get hurt.
Well,
I know. I understand.
Especially when your team consists of a bunch of psychos in a good way.
Yes.
Guys who roll out of bed and run through a wall.
Yep.
And sometimes the wall wins.
Yeah, right.
And we just get everybody back healthy for the 49ers.
Yeah.
Deebo Samuel back. Trent Williams back. Christian McCaffrey healthy. 2 weeks to rest up. And you're going to get caught up in some stupid-ass, meaningless.
They didn't think it was.
Meaningless. As they've been hanging around John Harbaugh. Is this consecutive wins in the preseason? Is this consecutive games with 100 yards in total team rushing?
You're funny.
What the I mean, seriously, why are you risking the guy who is the straw that stirs your milkshake?
Yeah.
Why are you risking this guy? For that, why? Why? Winning is fun. This stuff isn't fun if it gets Christian McCaffrey injured.
Yeah.
And that would have been the lead of the show. If he gets injured when they're dicking around, when they're dicking around at the end of the game,
hello, Liverpool,
trying to give this guy a meaningless touchdown, he gets injured, and we are killing Kyle Shanahan today. And he should be as criticized, almost as criticized, for letting it happen and taking that risk. He's playing Russian roulette with his franchise.
Yeah.
And it's inexcusable to me.
Well, listen, it's risky. Would I have done it? No. Okay. You know, it's part of what the 49ers are, though. And you talk about that, you know, renegade, psychos in a good way. That's pedal to the metal a little. It's what
all gas, no brakes.
Yeah, well,
woo, baby.
That's a reason
there's
came
a reason
from that
there's brakes.
Right. but you know, I think one, Shanahan is been around football his whole life, so there's a respect for history there. I also think McCaffrey is a little like that as well.
You know how you make history?
But
you know how you make history?
Win Super Bowl.
You win Super Bowl.
I hear you. So I'm with you in that it was risky. Thank God nothing happened. But yes, to be up 34-3, give him the ball a handful of times at the very end when the game was totally over, yes, was scary. And I certainly wouldn't have done it, but they did and they got away with it.
As much as I respect Kyle.
Yeah.
The reality is he is prone, and maybe this explains why you're his friend. He is prone to doing dumb shit, right? The super genius.
Maybe that's why he's my friend.
Got this weird blind spot where he'll just do dumb stuff, like let Steve Wilkes send everybody after the Vikings on, you know, the last
all
play of
blitz.
The half, all-out blitz, and they get burned for a long touchdown. Like, he's got these weird little misfires in his brain, and maybe that's one of the products of a highly functioning brain. There's going to be a misfire from time to time. I just think that he would admit, if he had to, I shouldn't have done that. There's
I would hope so. I would hope so. I don't know if that's one where McCaffrey was in his ear. You know, I don't know.
It's like Christian.
Know,
just, that's where the coach has said, Christian.
Yeah.
We just got everybody healthy again.
Right.
And our ability to win the Super Bowl is going to rest on keeping everybody healthy. But that's not how they think. That's the problem. In their mind, that's a loser's mentality. Because they're like, we use the Tasmanian devil comparison for a lot of guys in football.
Yeah.
Their whole team
is that exactly,
you know,
right.
And they don't care if they get injured along the way. They just and as soon as they're healthy, they're going to zzz all over the place again.
That's
and
right.
They get injured.
We don't remember
we're gonna
that last time.
All over the place again.
Right. Hey, well, the one thing to that point, I think that's going to be a good learning tool for Jacksonville and getting their butt whooped yesterday. They're going to realize, whoa, the 49ers' psychoness, Tasmanian devilness is on another level. And if we want to go to the Super Bowl and that's the intensity you got to have, then we got to up our game. So I think that's a learning experience for them. You make the point. Yeah, they just got healthy. And when you see the 49ers healthy on the offense, offensive side of the ball. When Shanahan can play, you know, Kittle and McCaffrey off each other, and then Debo off of McCaffrey, and then you sprinkle in some Brandon Ayuk, they're extremely tough to defend. You know, that's where Shanahan is so great. Oh, here's a run to McCaffrey. Here's a run to McCaffrey. Oh, I'm going to keep it out the backside, and now we're going to run, you know, a bootleg. Oh, touchdown. Here's the run to McCaffrey. Here's the run to McCaffrey. We're going to fake the run to McCaffrey. I'm going to toss it to Debo Samuel. He's going to come around in the reverse, right? Second and one. To your point, Tasmanian Devil. The hell with running it up the middle. We're going to take a 40-yard shot down the sideline to George Kittle and score on a huge touchdown for a 66-yard touchdown pass. But yes, when Shanahan has his crew healthy, Trent Williams healthy, we saw that they are certainly one of the most explosive, physical, dangerous teams in all of football.
34-3, just as the Jaguars had ascended into the upper echelon of the National Football League, they get a huge dose of reality. And I like your take that they got a glimpse of what they're going to have to become. If I'm Doug Peterson today, that's my message to the team. Let's watch this film. Look at what these guys do. You guys want to be among the greats. Right. You got to take the talent you have, and you've got to attach this mindset to it.
Yep.
And you got to go out there, and you got to Tasmanian Devil your way through
work
your
yourself
opponents.
Up to another level of intensity that you didn't realize you got to get to play with the cream of the crop in the NFL. Yeah, and that's what the game felt like to me. It felt like, you know, of course, like you said, they're healthy. They're coming off a bye week. They're pissed off they lost three in a row, right? They got Chase Young. That's a little bit of a bump on that side of the ball. They got all these things working there. And it felt like from the get-go that the 49ers were playing in fast forward and Jacksonville was like stuck in mud. I mean, they were winning the physical battle. They were flying around the field. The thing I saw on the defensive side that I felt like changed, Wilkes, we know Chase Young, they came out starting, and I think you heard me say this when the game I was going, man, the 49ers came out with 5D linemen. You know, so all the little issues they've had in the secondary stop in the past, they basically said, up yours. We're not going to give the quarterback enough time to throw the ball against our secondary. We're just going to cause issues that way. But I thought they did some different stuff with their alignments up front that caused problems for Jacksonville. We know they got a front four that is special. I mean, there's a three-man rush where they meet at the quarterback, the two Ohio State guys. You got Eric Armstead and Hargrave in the middle, right? And I just thought, Steve Wilkes, like this alignment here, Mike, right? I saw more of this. We don't know who's blitzing, who's coming. There's a guy on the edge. There's two guys in the middle, right? Just to create a little advantage for your defensive line and confusion for that O-line. That's all the 49ers and Steve Wilkes need. A little illusion of complexity, a little make the quarterback think just a little bit more. Those are the things they were missing. And then their talent on their team. I mean, you know, you heard Jason Garrett yesterday, right? Jason Garrett, who's coached the Cowboys, was on the greatest team maybe ever in the 92-93 Cowboys. He's turning around a few times during the game going, damn, don't they look good? Holy cow, don't they look good? The 49ers. You know, they have a look test when they're playing their best football, that is, right? I mean, you just go, wow, I don't know if anybody can play that level of football.
That's what makes it so stunning when they lose.
Exactly, right.
And when they lose three in a row and lose by 14 at home to cap it.
Yeah.
And I suspect it was a long 2 weeks for them of licking their wounds and searching their souls, but getting themselves healthy so they could Tasmanian Devil their way through the Jaguars. And I don't think the Jaguars ever really knew what was coming.
Agreed.
And I think the fact that they were getting a team that had lost three in a row maybe made them not as
urgent,
as prepared for what it was.
Right.
That, yeah, okay.
We're good,
yeah,
too.
Maybe it was a lot of maybe it's just a lot of hype and come on. We can we're good too.
Yeah.
They found out that they got some work to do to be on the same level as the 49ers. We showed you the touchdown pass earlier that started the scoring on the day. Brock Purdy rolling to his left.
Find a little time.
Throwing into the sea of hands.
Yeah.
And here's Kyle Shanahan from after the game on Purdy's play and specifically his decision to throw that ball where he did when he did it.
Yeah, that was honestly one of, I can say this because he played his ass, played well, but that was like one of his worst decisions I think he's made since he's been here. And it took me a while to get over it. I thanked him for the touchdown, but that was not a good decision. And he was fortunate with it, but he made a lot of really good plays. And if you are going to make a bad decision and it's still a touchdown, in the grand scheme of things, he can tell me it was a real good decision, but I know we can't. He knows that. He knows what he did wrong, but Ayuk made him right.
They say it's better to be lucky than good, but good prevails over time. It's better to be good because good is going to save your ass. That was when he threw that. I was like, oh,
I did too. I did too.
Oh, no. The 2 weeks off hasn't done anything to make this guy any better. The chariot has gone back to pumpkin. And then that ball just floats over everyone's hands and ends up in Brandon Ayuk's.
Oh, it's really, I mean, Kittle and Ayuk are both in the same spot. I questioned who he was even throwing to. I wasn't even sure who it was, right? But there was, some people there, some Jacksonville Jaguar defenders there where, that one I'm sure made Shanahan a little uneasy. But Brock Purdy, I think, has taken a little more criticism than he deserved in that three-game losing streak. I know he made some critical mistakes, but as I told you, in the Bengals game, he made some throws and plays in that game where I went, that's as good as I've ever seen him throw it or make plays there. Hopefully this gets him back on track. The big thing that happened to them in the three-game losing streak, right, was they were unhealthy and they asked too much of Brock Purdy. This is the right mix here. When they can run the ball, not ask him to throw the ball 40 times a game and carry the team, this is where he really shines. And we'll see if they can continue this dominance there. But, yeah, like you said, Jacksonville never could get going, never met the intensity of the 49ers, and Trevor Lawrence was uncomfortable the whole day.
And the 49ers weren't content to stand pat with that defense. They knew they needed some improvements. They knew they needed to make some changes. Steve Wilks coming from the booth down to the sideline.
Right.
That clearly helped.
Definitely.
And it wasn't just some random decision that was made. It's a fundamental difference in the existence of a coach to be positioned in the booth watching everything unfold and having more information on which future decisions can be based about how you're going to attack a team versus being on the sideline where you don't have the same perspective, but you're able to communicate. And communication was the word that came up last week. He wanted to be able to communicate with his guys better. And whatever it was, it worked. And we know how sports are. When you find something that works, you don't change it. You keep doing it. What was happening before wasn't working. This worked, so you keep doing it. It helped that they got Chase Young. And there was a report yesterday morning from Shefty that they had looked into Patrick Surtain of the Broncos, Jalen Johnson of the Bears, Montez Sweat also, and they ended up sending the third-round pick conditional compensatory third round pick to Washington for Chase Young. And I poked around a little bit because we were talking about that whole what they tried to do to get Surtain. The Eagles were in it too, and it was, as it was described to me, both the Eagles and the 49ers were like, we don't want the other to get him.
An arms race.
Like, we can't, we'd rather he just stay in Denver.
Yeah.
If anybody's going to get him, we want it to be us.
Right.
And at the end of the day, the Broncos are like, hang on.
Yeah.
Hang on.
We got to salvage our own season here a little.
We're not trading this guy.
Right.
They'd have to be completely blown away. And maybe it'll happen in the offseason. I don't know.
Yeah.
They'd have to be completely blown away to move on from a guy that they regard as a cornerstone player of their franchise. But it's just funny to see that the Eagles and the 49ers. And look, they're the two. You can put the Cowboys in there now, too.
Yeah.
Because when the Cowboys are firing all cylinders, they can beat anybody. Mm-hmm. And if they're playing at home, they beat everybody.
Right.
But Eagles, 49ers, and then a little half-click Cowboys, a little half-click Lions. Yeah. But it's Eagles, 49ers running that conference.
I think so. I think when we look at them playing at their best, those look like the two best teams to me. You know, they've all had their little hiccups here and there. But, yeah, hey, listen, that's a Jacksonville team that I look at and go, there's not many weak spots on that roster. They got talent everywhere. And the 49ers brought it to them in a big way. You know, and, hey, the NFL is crazy, too. You know, it's the cell. You know, we saw in there they got down there close to make the game interesting. It's 20-10, right? I believe it was 20-10 and drove down there. Or no, it was good. They were going to try to make it 20-10. It was 20-3. Christian Kirk fumbles. You know, when they're down there close to scoring a touchdown, they had another drive where it was second and short, and they were in field goal territory on the 49ers, and Trevor Lawrence threw a bad interception to Hufanga. So it was just not a good showing by Jacksonville, but agreed with you. In San Francisco at their best, the talent on the roster, the way they play, the way they're coached, I think Wilkes being on the field, to your point, you have a feel. You don't overreact as much. You know, you get a feel from the players a little bit about how they feel during the game. There's a different aspect or look you get from the game on the field as compared to up in the box, you know, 300 feet above the field there.
Peter King made the Jaguars in his preseason predictions the number one seed in the AFC because their schedule is not daunting.
Right.
And the 49ers game was one of the remaining maybe we have a problem moments on the schedule. But you know what? As we look forward, all of a sudden that schedule, it's funny how the season unfolding, can take a weak schedule and make it look not so weak.
Right.
They've got the Titans at home. Titans at home next week. But then they're at the Texans, who already beat them by 20 in Jacksonville.
Exactly right. Right.
So that isn't a road apple game anymore.
No.
Then they got the Bengals on a Monday night.
Right.
And we know who the Bengals are and what the Bengals are. Then they got to go to Cleveland.
Yes.
You want to go to Cleveland in December? Do you want to go to Cleveland anytime and play the Browns this year? I don't think so. Oh, and then they got the Ravens on Sunday Night Football week 15.
No doubt.
So it really isn't as easy as it looks. The last three games at Tampa, Carolina, at Tennessee, okay.
Yeah, favorable.
But you got to get there. I mean, they could find themselves losing the division to the Texans.
Yeah, well, you can certainly see them losing three out of four of those games you just mentioned there, right? And go, well, that's not crazy to think that they lost to the Bengals, the Browns, and, you know, the Texans, and maybe beat the Ravens or whatever, however you want to put it. But, yeah, that's what's it's going to be dicey down the stretch with some of these AFC football teams because they're all playing each other. And I think we have a good chance of, like we kind of talked about before the year, of seeing a team where in the AFC this year where we can go, that team could have won the Super Bowl and they might not make the playoffs just because of how talented the conference is.
That November 26th game, week 12, 1 o'clock Eastern, Jaguars at Texans is critical too, because if the Texans complete the sweep
– it's
then they win if they're
all tiebreakers. Yeah,
they win the tiebreaker. Right. They win the division. Right. All they have to have is the same record as the Jaguars, and they win the division. So, Jaguars have reason to be concerned, not just because they lost, but because of the way they lost. Can they pick up the pieces and get ready, and maybe learn, like you said, that lesson, which will come in handy, not this week against the Titans necessarily, but at Texans, Bengals, at Browns, Ravens. Those four games that are really going to define. Are they ready to enter the conversation? They've entered the conversation of the elite teams in the AFC. Are they ready to stay there, or are they going to surrender their grip on it? So a lot to be learned about the Jaguars coming up in the next few weeks. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we return.
Oh, when we return, it's going to be the greatest segment in Mike Florio's life. That's right. Did you see that smirk there? He couldn't even contain it.
The greatest segment will be the Monday after they win the Super Bowl if I live long enough.
That will be a
great segment.
They
might be broadcasting from my final place of burial.
It'll be on your gurney somewhere.
That would be something. If I was able to contribute from the other side of the great beyond, that would probably do some views.
That would be. It'd be a first, at least as we know
of. Let's take a break. More PFT Live right after this. Well, not a first.
Second. Magic.
Second.
You're right.
What do you say right here, fellas? I think he knows just about every one of your names by now. All right? Well, I can get used to giving this guy game balls each and every Sunday. Proud of him. Josh Duffy.
Kevin O'Connell giving out the game balls yesterday. I love watching the Kevin O'Connell handing out the game balls in the locker room because the way that the players respond to him, he's just got the right touch.
He does.
And he communicates so well with the players. He's got a very appealing way about him. He's very self-aware.
Yeah.
He
doesn't come off as soft as doing that either, right? There's the right sternness about it.
He knows when to get pissed
because
he was pissed last week against the Falcons. Guys getting hit in the head, KJ Osborne, Jordan Addison. He was pissed. He was animated. He was fired up when they won that game.
Right.
But it's kind of like he just gets it. He understands. You know, it's a long season. He understands you're going to have some calls go your way, calls not go your way, days go your way, days not go your way, but they're trying their damnedest to build something, to win every game, to take it one game at a time. But, man, to start 1-4, to dig that hole, and to just one at a time.
Yeah.
5-0 without Justin Jefferson.
Right.
1-4 with Justin Jefferson.
Right.
5-0 without Justin Jefferson.
Yeah. Team sport shows.
Unbelievable.
You. Got a lot of examples of that in the NFL right now.
And he's got a great system. Look,
right.
I feel like it's in the best interest of the Vikings and Kirk Cousins to continue their relationship next year. But like so many other things that will reveal themselves in time, we'll know by whenever the dust settles on the Vikings season, what next year brings.
Right.
And they shouldn't be premature about it. They shouldn't make it. I'm thinking back to the 98 season when they got all jazzed up about Randall Cunningham. They gave him a 5-year, $25 million contract, which was a lot at the time, for especially a guy that had been cast out of the league. they're picking him over Brad Johnson. Well,
yeah,
you know, and right. by the next year, he was benched for Jeff George. Right. So you got to be careful about making broad decisions. But Josh Dobbs is giving them a factor that they didn't anticipate considering. Going into the year, my thought was, okay, they're just going to try to get their young franchise guy. Their Fran Tarkenton's going to be there for 10, 15 years. And the Kirk Cousins injury happens. Josh Dobbs falls out of the sky into their laps. And he's been great. And he looked like a guy who had the benefit of another week, a full week, to get to know everybody's names, to get comfortable with everyone. He played so much better yesterday than he did against the Falcons.
Oh,
the only issue was once Jameis Winston was in the game and Jameis gives no F's and starts throwing the ball all over the place, it made for an interesting finish.
That's right. I said to you, I said, oh, no, Jameis is in for you. You don't want that. He don't care. He's just going to fire that thing. He's the most dangerous guy to face in this situation. But, like, blown away by Josh Dobbs is an understatement. I mean, it's an understatement. I don't even know what to say about not only but him and like you're talking about with the Vikings in general. Now, at 1-4 and then 2-4, we did see things of going, Minnesota's actually playing better football in totality than they were last year, right? You know, and I think at one moment we were like, they're 2-4, and I actually feel like they're better than they were last year. They just messed things up a lot, had that fumble disease early on in the football game. Defense is damn good, like we're seeing with Brian Flores, but I mean, O'Connell, I just thought they were dead in the water. A team that is one of the worst in football running the ball, and now you're going to bring a guy in. You know, it's rookie quarterback. Okay, what if Dobbs plays? Who cares? It's not going to be that much better. And, I mean, yesterday it looked like he had been the backup in Minnesota for 4 years and knew the offense like the back of his hand. I just, you know, you go the first drive, okay, it's the first drive, they get a field. Second drive, they go down, you go, oh, okay, you know, O'Connell probably got a few more tricks. They can't keep doing this. Next drive, march right down the field, he makes more big plays. Hawkinson scrambling. I mean, he did it with his arms and his legs during the football game. It's remarkable. It tells you how smart he is. It tells you how good O'Connell is, like you're talking about. And you guys got some mojo working up there in Minnesota.
Well, and that running game's starting to fire up a little bit, too. Yeah. Ty Chandler yesterday had one
touchdown.
That's where
Dobbs will help.
Had another one taken off the board by a holding penalty.
Yep.
He had Dobbs was almost the leading rusher by both teams by 1 yard. I thought he was going to be. It was 66 last week, 44 yesterday, but Chandler ended up with 45. And Alexander Mattison got banged up at some point yesterday. Cam Akers is out for the year with a torn Achilles. But, if Dobbs is bedeviling defenses with his throwing and his mobility, and it's amazing how he moves. He's fast.
Faster than – he catches people by surprise.
Yeah.
Breaks more arm tackles or people holding on to him than you would expect too, right?
He's fast. He's elusive. Yeah. He's agile. His touchdown run was a thing of beauty. And the scramble drill – and I was surprised when I talked to T.J. Hockenson about this because I would have thought I would have heard this at some point. He and Hockenson work out in the offseason.
Yeah.
Not because they're teammates, obviously. Hockenson's in Nashville. Josh is a Tennessee guy.
Right.
And Hockenson said whenever Josh would text that he wants a throw, he'd always go. There was a great ball. You know, so got to know him that way. Yeah. And when Josh starts running around, Hockenson knows, go find a spot. And they've got that existing
little
connection.
Feel for each other. Right.
When you have familiarity with somebody, especially when you walk into a team where you have no familiarity with anyone, hey, I know this guy. I throw passes to him in Nashville in the offseason.
Right.
He kind of gets how I move.
Yeah.
There's something real to that.
There's nothing tangible to that.
When you have that relationship, when you've seen how a guy moves, when you anticipate when he's getting ready to throw you the ball, that just makes it easier for everybody, especially when he doesn't have that connection with anyone else.
Yeah. No, I think that it is real. It is. And then there's, you know, like you say, just, hey, when you're a T.J. Hockenson, you go, hey, wait, this quarterback knows me a little bit and all that, too. You start to look for the ball because you go, wait, I got, you know, he feels comfortable with me. Let me make myself available during this scramble drill. He knows he's being looked at by a guy that goes, wait, I know you. I know how your body moves, so I feel very comfortable throwing you the football. But, I mean, that, you know, Flores, this is one where, I wanted to see the Josh Dobbs hype train one more week before I bought in. I'm still blown away with how good it looked there yesterday. And then, you know, Minnesota's defense basically, you know, shutting down New Orleans early on, and Derek Carr knocking him around. And that same offense is still, I mean, they don't run the ball that very, very well. It's dink and dunk pass offense. It's basic West Coast stuff. And I know Brian Flores and that defense were all over some of those concepts, and the Saints offense could never really get going until late in the football game.
Well, but once Derek Carr got injured, it changed the dynamic for everyone.
Yep.
And Carr got high load.
Oh, he took a big one.
And there's one angle of it where he just disappears from view.
Yeah, right. It's like
you
a cartoon.
See him and then you don't.
Right.
Yeah. Like there should be a trail behind after he's gone. Like there's a little wisp of a cloud after he's gone. There it is. My God, it's painful to watch it. Danielle Hunter, clean hit, but he suffered a concussion. Right shoulder injury. I'm told they believe they avoided a major problem. Same shoulder, got injured back in week 3.
Right.
Avoided the major problem then. So they'll see. They're going into their bye week, which is good news for them. It's the perfect time for the bye, I was told. It gives him a chance to come back. Dennis Allen said after the game, no quarterback controversy. Derek Carr is the starter. But when Winston came in, down the field, touchdown pass to the back of the end zone, Chris Olave, great job by him of getting both feet down, because his second foot was almost on the foot of the defender.
Right.
But he got the toxic black pebbles at the bottom. And then this one, Jameis running around. I mean, come on, where's the pass rush? And he fires it all the way across the field. Unbelievable.
Oh, that's when you went, I don't know. Maybe the Saints are going to make some magic.
Well, yeah, because that makes it a one-score game.
Right,
that's what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
27-3. Oh, they're kicking the crap out of him. Wait a minute. The two-point conversion, divide, carry the one. That's 3 scores.
Right.
It's like baseball. If it's baseball, it's 3-0. If it's a soccer, hockey, it's 3-0. Okay, and we saw touchdown, two-pointer, 2-score game. Touchdown, two-pointer, 1-score game. What the hell? I mean, this is one of those where you take off your shoulder pads at halftime and just go chill. This was supposed to be a blowout. And they had to – I mean, we see that from time to time where it looks like it's going to be easy and then all of a sudden it's not. Can you answer the bell? In the Vikings defense, a couple of interceptions down the stretch. There was another one that was – it wasn't dropped. It just hit the ground. Cam Bynum had it. But that's the story of this team. That's the difference, Chris, between the 2022 Vikings and the 2023 Vikings.
Right.
We were talking about this earlier. When a defense is great and the offense is bad, all you hear is how bad the offense is. When an offense is great and the defense is bad, it's like, wow, that team's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, the defense sucks.
Right.
They'd be better if the defense wasn't ass. The Vikings defense was ass last year, and this year Brian Flores has turned them into something, and they're getting better every week. You can see it every week. And again, we got a long way to go. Long way to go. But they've already come a long way defensively, and if they stay defensively on that trajectory – who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? That's the fun of this. We don't know. Texans. Maybe it'll be a Texans-Vikings Super Bowl. I don't know. The way – you know, you just don't know.
No,
you don't know.
It's crazy. You're right. Listen, there's things to admire. I would have thought there's no way Minnesota could actually get into the playoffs. Now you look at them and go, damn, the way they're playing, if Dobbs keeps this going, okay, you know, maybe they got a chance to win a game in the playoffs, make some waves that way. We'll see where it goes. Right, we know they still got, 2 matchups with the Detroit Lions, so it's not like the Lions got this thing in the bank yet as far as the division goes. That'll be interesting, but still, with what you know, Dobbs is doing, Kevin O'Connell coaching them up, Flores on defense, like you said, they're a more complete team than they were last year. Last year, it was just relying on late game Justin Jefferson, Kirk Cousins magic. You know, this year, you feel like they have a few more avenues to stay in the game, and it's not necessarily all dependent on just big plays in the pass game.
Vikings are currently a half game out of the 5 seed in the NFC. The Seahawks and the Cowboys are both 6-3. The Vikings are 6-4. They hold the 7 seed right now, and there's some separation that's building.
It is.
Between the 7 seed and everybody else, but we know how quickly that can change. The Vikings have a shot at catching the Lions, though. The Lions 7-2, Vikings 6-4. They play 2 out of the last 3 weeks against each other.
Right.
And the Vikings have Broncos next Sunday night on NBC and Peacock, the Bears the following Monday night to cap Thanksgiving weekend. Then they have their bye. Then they go to Las Vegas. Then they go to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And then it's Lions, Packers, Lions.
Right.
So you got 6 wins. I mean, at this point, they should win enough to qualify for the postseason. They should. Whether or not they do, who knows? The question is, can they take the division? That's the question.
Yeah, we'll see.
Could they steal the division from the
Detroit's
Lions?
Schedule is similar to yours, guys, down the stretch.
They got one tough game other than the Vikings. That Viking is getting, you know, it looked like, eh. Now it's like, they got the Cowboys week 17.
Right, right.
They should win every other game. Vikings, Cowboys, Vikings, that's going to be the test for the Lions at the end.
Yeah, we'll see. I certainly, hey, the way the offense, Dobbs proven me wrong. You know, what Kevin O'Connell does on the offensive side of the ball, the defense being a pain in the butt there, they certainly have more than a fighting chance right now to get themselves into the playoffs and do something really miraculous as far as I'm concerned, because I thought they were dead in the water once Kirk Cousins went down with that injury.
And one last point, too, because Vikings fans are now starting to worry that Brian Flores is going to be a head coach somewhere else next year. He's still got that lawsuit against the NFL.
Yeah.
And I hope that somebody does the right thing and ignores the lawsuit and makes a decision about who the head coach of a team should be solely on merit. But there's so many viable candidates, it won't surprise me if he gets passed over, because at the end of the day, even if you're not supposed to consider it, even if it makes things worse in your litigation that you're defending against this guy, he's still the guy that sued Club Oligarch, and all the oligarchs join arms and they red rover you into oblivion once you've done that. So hopefully he'll be the exception. That'll be something if he becomes a head coach. I think it would be a sign that the NFL doesn't quite operate the way I think they do.
Yeah.
If they would break that norm and somebody would give Brian Flores a head coaching job. I mean, the Steelers already crossed that boundary by giving him the job.
Right.
And then the Vikings making him the coordinator.
Right.
They probably got some
side eyes
at the league meetings.
Right.
You make a guy head coach when he's been the one who filed that seminal landmark race discrimination lawsuit with Steve Wilkes and Ray Horton as his co-plaintiffs. So we'll see. We'll see. But it may be undeniable what he's doing with his defense.
It may
be something where you say, I don't care. I just want to win football games.
Now, there's some good assistants out there this year. We know that are certainly big-time head coaching candidates. But we saw already, first off, he was a pretty damn good head coach already in Miami before this. And I think that you will find teams where they're going to look at him. He's been too impressive to everybody that's ever met him in the interview process, and I just feel like it's only a matter of time before he becomes a head coach once again.
I mean, why wouldn't the Patriots be thinking about bringing him back?
Yeah.
Really?
I hear you. Right. I hear you.
I know that it's kind of like been promised to Gerard Mayo or whatever.
Yeah, and it seems that way.
Everybody that covers a team thinks that it's going to be Mayo, but there's also a point where it gets so bad, and this could hurt Flores as well.
Yeah.
They don't want anybody. They don't want any Patriot way. We're going a new way. Patriot way's over.
I think that could be dangerous too. Exactly right.
All right, break time. We mentioned the Lions. We'll talk about how they managed to outduel the L.A. Chargers on Sunday when PFT Live continues right after this.
Here we go. Final play of the game. Lions going for the win. 41-yard field goal attempt, hash mark left side. McQuaid to snap. There it is. Fox the hold. Patterson the kick. It is up and it is good. He got it. That's a victory for the Lions on the final play of the game. And what a game it was.
Let me just say that for the first time ever yesterday, we started seeing this angle behind the kicker on a consistent basis. We saw it in the NFL Network game, Colts Patriots.
Yeah.
I just love getting that look. It gives you an idea of what the kicker is dealing with.
Yeah, I hear you there.
You know, it is a great, great angle. We saw in the long kick that was attempted, I think, by the Patriots, high snap.
Yep.
Yeah, and it just gives you a greater appreciation of what that play is all about. You don't need any other angle for that. All you need is that big giant yellow U. And you see the ball, and you can see if it goes through or not.
Yeah.
I think that should be the default angle. Use SkyCam. We were having the conversation in the viewing room yesterday about how, I know, different SkyCams, you can do different things. But get that SkyCam down there.
I like it. I like it, except on really long field goals.
Yeah.
That's where, because then you don't know. Like, I think they showed, in one of the games yesterday, they showed that angle. It was a really long field goal. And I went, oh, man, right down the middle. And it was like 5 yards short. It might have been the game in Germany. The Colts, didn't they attempt a really long field goal at one point? But they were showing it behind. I'm going, oh, man, he knocked it in. And they're like, oh, and he comes up short. You couldn't tell there.
I think that's the one where it was the high snap. snap.
I guess
put
that's
it down.
The one maybe I'm thinking about. Maybe
yeah,
you're right.
I know.
We watched so much damn football
together.
But that was this game yesterday was exciting. If you like points and plays and yards on the field, that's for sure.
Well, I'm going to sound the alarm here a little bit for the Lions.
Yeah, go ahead. They need it.
Because they had 2 weeks to get ready for this game.
Right.
Chargers played last Monday night in New York.
Right.
Got a physical, tough game.
Right.
Offense was stifled and stymied by the Jets. Guys banged up a little bit more. Got to fly back across the country. Short week. I don't like this scheduling clerk. We were talking about it not long ago with somebody else. Where
bye weeks and Monday
night
games.
Yeah, you got a bye week, and then you got a team coming off a Monday night game. It's not fair to the Chargers. Man, they answered the bell. And where's the Lions' defense? Yeah. It shouldn't have been.
The 49ers you were talking
about. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. It shouldn't have been.
Right.
It shouldn't have been like this. It shouldn't have been so close. It should have been the Lions throttling the Chargers, stifling and stymieing the Justin Herbert-led offense. That's what surprised me. And I assume that stadium was full of Lions fans, and they were using the silent count on offense for L.A. I think what happens in SoFi Stadium, because of that roof, it's so loud, both teams have to use the silent count on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But I think that it's alarming if you're a Lions fan that it was as close as it was, and that they gave up as many points as they did to the Chargers, given the broader circumstances. Bye week for the Lions, 6-day turnaround, cross country, tough physical game against the Jets. They shouldn't have scored that many points against the Lions.
I think the jury is out still on how good the Lions defense is. We know it's better than last year. That's for sure, right? But I think the thing we can question is, haven't played a lot of great offenses. And offenses with firepower, like Seattle scored 37. We know Mahomes and, Chubbs Tony dropping all those catches in the first game certainly left some plays on the yard, right? We know what the Ravens did. I've had a few conversations about this on my podcast because the Lions, their fans, they always tweet into me, hey, what's our defense doing? What's your blah, 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 right? Well, I mean, we'll hit on the offense in a second here. But the defense, Mike, to your point and the concern is, one, there's a lot of good. There's not a lot of great, right? There's only, to me, one blue chip I can make a superstar play every game type of guy, and that's Aiden Hutchinson. There's a lot of other good guys in the front seven, but not guys that just go, oh, wait, he creates chaos and makes plays and Fs the play up like we talk about. He, to me, is the only guy on that end. The other aspect of this, and this is something I've hit on a few times, is we've talked about the Chargers. They got big receivers who don't separate, right? Didn't matter yesterday. Detroit doesn't like to play man-to-man. They don't play man. To me, it's one of the issues with their team. So now you're talking about they don't have a big-time pass rush as a unit, and then you play zone coverage behind it all the time, and you got to play a guy like Justin Herbert, and Kellen Moore is a pretty damn good coach, and those receivers got a good feel for where to sit in the zone and how to attack it in there, and that, to me, is one of the things to watch out for with Detroit here. I do think they're a blue-chip player away in the secondary from being real good. They've played a lot of bad offenses in the NFL this year. I think that's led to maybe a better statistical ranking than what they got. They need Chauncey Gardner-Johnson back. I think that'll help them. But the defense, to your point, I think is the main concern with Detroit. No doubt about that.
And, we mentioned that schedule. Not a lot of great offenses in the coming weeks. They've got the Bears at home Sunday.
Right.
Then they've got the Packers for the Thanksgiving game.
Right.
At the Saints.
Yeah.
Who knows about the Saints at that point?
Yeah.
At the Bears. Broncos week 15. Then it's at Vikings, at Cowboys, Vikings to end the season.
You're like you said, not great offenses there.
Those last three games, though,
that's going to be
the test.
Yeah.
And for a game like yesterday, whatever the Chargers did, when it's time for the Vikings and the Cowboys to play them, let's look at that film, let's see what the Chargers did, and let's do some of that same stuff.
Yeah.
Or zig based on whatever zag they think we're going to do based on that stuff. But regardless, that becomes the foundation for trying to crack the code on the Lions defense.
There's certainly going to be some of that, no doubt. I think the other aspect or the thing that's going to help them out is what we saw yesterday is just how good – when their offensive line is healthy, which they're pretty close to what their original unit should be there in Detroit and how the season started – you see yesterday, I know this Chargers defense isn't good, but it had been a little better as of late. They couldn't stop any aspect of Detroit's offense at all. I mean, the two-headed monster that they got at running back behind that offensive line, that's dangerous. Jahmyr Gibbs is starting to look like, I know Montgomery had the better day, right? But that was because of the 75-yard touchdown. On carry-per-carry basis, Gibbs is somebody that he catches your eye, right? I mean, to me, he does. When he has the ball, I go, holy crap, who is that guy flying up the sidelines there? You couple that, the offensive line, the run game, Goff being one of the best play-action quarterbacks in football. They got a great play-action attack. And then you got Amon-Ra St. Brown and Laporta, right? And, you know, Brock Wright, who's a good, damn good tight end there. Detroit's offense is going to have to be the star of the show there. And we'll see what this Detroit defense does down the stretch. But certainly letting up a few too many big plays here the last few weeks. We'll see where it goes.
Three Lions rookies have generated 400 or more yards from scrimmage and four touchdowns in a three-game span. Jahmyr Gibbs this year, Barry Sanders in 1989, and Billy Sims in 1980. So pretty good company for Jahmyr Gibbs so far. Along the way to that last-second victory, there was a decision made by Dan Campbell to go for it on 4th and 2 from the Chargers 26 with 1:47 to play. Now, it's a makeable field goal. The issue is, how much time do you leave on the clock for
Justin
the Chargers?
Herbert, who'd been moving the ball on us all day,
and this is like analytics time, like percent chance winning if you kick the field goal, make it, and give them the ball versus percent chance winning if you go for it and don't get it.
Yeah.
What's your percent there? And there's the play, shotgun formation. Jared Goff finds Sam Laporta for the first down, and it allows them to milk the clock down to the final seconds for the game-winning field goal. So a great decision by Dan Campbell. Gutsy decision by Dan Campbell. Let's hear from Jared Goff after the game on Dan Campbell's decision to go for it on 4th and 2.
With our guy, I kind of lean towards we're going until he tells us we're not. And that's not just in that situation. That's kind of in every fourth down that we get. And had a good feeling he would go for it, just like that area we were in. We kind of wanted to get an extra 5 or 10 yards to secure it, as well as I'm sure in his head he didn't want to give Justin the ball back with a minute and a half. So there was many factors going into that. But, yeah, he's got big balls, and he showed it there. And it's a lot of fun when he puts the ball in our hands to make the play.
Wow, that didn't get bleeped. I thought that was going to get bleeped.
Not with your dirty mouth here today.
Well, a lot of times when they have a chance to bleep it ahead of time, they do, because they have to bleep us anyway. Anyway, I'm glad it wasn't bleeped. That's what he said. But this is where the influence of analytics, I think, makes sense, because you have to think about not just what happens
it's
if I don't make
the game.
It?
I'm usually for kicking the field goal. That was one where I went,
six,
I get
six,
it.
If it's 6-6, you kick the field goal.
Exactly.
When it's 38-38,
right,
and it's been up and down, up and down,
and
up and down.
Quarterback's grooving on the other side. Exactly right. That's what we talk about. It's your example you gave where you go, wait, this is a field goal, field position territory game. Yeah. Why are we going for it now?
Last night, Jets-Raiders, you kicked the field goal.
Exactly right. Yeah. It's in that type of football game. But I think yesterday Dan Campbell was 4 for 5 on fourth down gambles there. So they were hot that way. The one they missed early on in the football game, I did not agree with that. It was 10-3. They had just intercepted Justin Herbert, had the ball in the short field. Come away, go up 10 points. He went for it. They got stopped. Either way, it didn't matter in the big picture of the football game. But, yeah, they keep the pressure on you. And with that offensive line, when they get into – 3rd and 5 or less, they got 2 plays, and they can run the ball on 3rd and 5 and also, of course, throw the ball and be aggressive off of it. But they got a lot of different ways to beat you because Ben Johnson's extremely creative. They got a lot of different run game schemes they hit you with. They got some playmakers with the ball in their hands. If they can get Jameson Williams, their first-round pick from 2 years ago, really going, I think it'll take their offense to a whole nother danger level as far as that's concerned. But, damn, they look good on that side of the ball yesterday.
The Hunters have become the hunted, though, and it's going to be interesting down the stretch. They're going to get everything that their opponents have each and every week. The Lions have that shine now to them, and it culminates in Vikings, Cowboys, Vikings, the final 3 weeks of the season, right around Christmas time and New Year's. And it's going to be a lot of fun to see how it unfolds. Let's go ahead and take a break. Superlatives time for Week 10. And I'm going to find a way to wedge in what happened yesterday morning in Germany.
Okay.
There's nothing superlative about that, I'm going to find a way to get
it
in there.
Say it in German. Whatever your superlatives, look it up.
I don't know any German curse words.
Well, you have a Google.
I know all the Italian curse words.
I know a few German curse words.
Well, we'll talk about them during the break. We'll be right back.
Here we go. The snap's good. The ball's down. The kick is up. And the kick is good. And the Cardinals win it. 25-23. Welcome back, Kyler.
Kyler Murray back for the Cardinals. Arizona getting their second win of the season, taking down the Falcons. I can't figure out the Falcons. It just feels like the Falcons are falling apart.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah, it's 2023. And when you can't throw for 100 yards in a football game, it's hard to win in the NFL. I mean, we talk about it all the time. As much as you want to run the ball and do that, there's D linemen growing on trees everywhere. If you think you're just going to run the ball every game on everybody with no help from the pass game, that ain't going to work this day and age. And that, again, continues to be the problem for the Atlanta Falcons.
All right, superlatives time for week 10. You're up first, and I have a feeling it has something to do with the clip we just saw.
It does. I mean, you sure? I'm going to call it the "you sure you want to draft another quarterback" award or superlative. That's what I'm going to go with there. Kyler Murray, I mean, hasn't played in a little less than a year. To look the way he did, it was, I'm not going to say as shocking as Josh Dobbs and what he's doing in Minnesota, but still shocking. I mean, one, and the way he threw the football, I was impressed with that. Great control. He made a lot of good decisions other than his one interception, and I'm not sure his tight end didn't kind of screw him over in that. His speed, it's still special, right? I mean, again, he has some attributes about him that you go, all right, I don't, you know, you could draft a quarterback from college. He might be better, but I don't know. Is he going to have more talent and special skills than this guy? Big throw there late in the game to Trey McBride, who's becoming his go-to target. But Kyler Murray, to not play for that long, be in a new offense, execute that way, had some drops in the game that certainly went against him too. You know, we know his scrambling and running is going to open up the rest of the offense. You know, him with Rondale Moore and Trey McBride and Michael Wilson and Hollywood Brown, it seems like they have people around him that would make sense for his offense, right? So, impressive win by him, but way to go for Kyler Murray to come back and win the game in that fashion.
This is a complicated, delicate balance for the Cardinals.
Really,
to take in a bunch of different factors. Man. Is he our guy for the future? If not, what do we do with him? If he gets injured at some point,
right,
like he did last year, they're on the hook for millions in injury guarantees that have yet to vest but will next year while he's injured. So they've just got some stuff they got to figure out. And just go figure it out. Just embrace it. This is it. They've already given the guy the big contract. Let's just go forward and see what we have with Kyler Murray. And what they got yesterday was a victory.
Yeah.
All right. First one for me, and this reminds me of an old joke. I don't think it's inappropriate. Jesus is golfing. You know this joke? Jesus is golfing and he hits one into the water and he walks out on water to reach down and get it out of the water. And somebody says, "Hey, who's that guy think he is?" Jesus says, "No, he thinks he's Jack Nicklaus." Anyway, who do you think you are? Dan Marino?
That's good.
And I said this yesterday as the play was happening.
Right, right.
When Bailey Zappi does the fake spike, I said, "Who does he think he is? Dan Marino?"
Yeah.
And he throws it, as Jason McCourty said, into a team meeting of Colts. It's like, nope, he's not Dan Marino. Think about this. The guy gets put into the game for the last drive. And like 7-8 years ago, we would think there was some master Bill Belichick plan that they had practiced this over and over again for this moment, and they're going to do a fake spike with the backup quarterback who knows how to run it to perfection. No, I felt like they didn't know what the hell they were doing. I felt like the whole thing was a crap show. It was embarrassing. And I don't know who in the viewing room said, "Hey, is he trying to get himself fired like George Costanza?" And, you know, you hear kind of that kind of like joking, but is it like he really just kind of sticking it to Bob Kraft at this point? Like, what's going on with Bill Belichick? The whole thing was weird. The benching of Mac Jones was weird that late in the game. And then that decision to do a fake spike with a guy who presumably has not been practicing fake spikes or much at all in the 2-minute drill out there doing it. The whole thing was weird to me.
It's been a lot of curious decisions the last few years. You know, I don't know if it's, you know, ego, you know, total just loss of feel for the NFL, whether it comes to the offensive coordinator things last year, right? Some of the decisions that have been made on personnel, lack of wide receivers or speed on their football team, the way they've handled the backup quarterback situation all year. None of it makes sense. None of it seems like Patriots. The Patriots, like, I never would have thought that that's something Bill Belichick would do there yesterday. He, first off, never makes it about one guy, really, right? It's always like, stay the course, on to Cincinnati, right? I mean, to think, okay, first off, you're going to put Bailey Zappe in that situation, who's not overly talented to begin with. He hasn't been in any situation like that all year long, right? He's also a guy that, to your team, they're going, what do we even think of Bailey Zappe? We've, what, cut him twice during the year? He wasn't on the active roster 1 week, right? I mean, he's barely looks like he's been able, capable of being the backup, you know, for just lack of better options. They've stayed with him there. It was crazy. I know that Mac Jones interception was horrible down the stretch, but to think Bailey Zappe was going to come in and lead you down on a touchdown drive late in a football game in Germany when, like, to Devin McCourty's point, probably hasn't run the two-minute drill all year long, that I just can't even believe Bill Belichick would do that. That was shocking to me.
The interception was horrible. The drive before that, where he had a guy at the goal line, guy at the back of the end zone, and it almost got picked off again.
Right.
That was horrible. The whole everything about it, everything about what the Patriots are doing now is just confounding, confusing. All the way back to, in the second quarter of the game, doing an all-out punt block with no one back to field the punt and gave up 19 yards of field position.
It was a field position game, like we were talking about just a minute ago, and you know, having a feel for when to go for it, not to go for it. That made no sense to me at all.
I don't know what's up with Bill Belichick. I know Robert Kraft was on NFL Network yesterday before the game. I've never been 2-7 before. This isn't what we expected. He made it clear back in March they want to go to the playoffs this year. Playoffs obviously aren't happening at 2-8. I don't know how many – they're not going to get to 7 wins. He wants 7th Super Bowl. They're not going to get to 7 wins this year.
No.
I really do believe – we've got to take a break, but I believe that they're getting the word out now of where this is going. They're not going to fire him. They expect one of these desperate teams, one of these dysfunctional teams that's smitten with the idea of Bill Belichick, whether it's the Buccaneers, whether it's the Commanders, the Panthers, because who the hell knows what David Tepper's going to do at any given moment. But somebody's going to get – ooh, we can get Bill Belichick. Let's give him a second-round pick for Bill Belichick. Let's give him something. And then they avoid owing him a penny. They get something for him, and they move on with someone else. Not an easy thing to set up, and I have a feeling it will be set up before we get to the end of the season, and it just kind of unfolds once you activate it after the season because you have to do a full search. You got to comply with the Rooney Rule.
Right.
The Patriots have to have a plan to pivot to once they get a phone call. I just think that's where it's all heading. He's going to be coaching someone else next year, and the Patriots going to get something in exchange for him. That's what they're trying to set up.
Wow.
And I think without that, he'd be fired today.
Yeah.
Without that, well, I think he'd be gone today.
I would hope they wouldn't. I would hope that he's done enough to not be fired, right? I'll be interested to see if that happens, what you're saying. I could certainly see some people take the bait or want to do that or make that move. I also would say to that, I would go, why? Why? What he's running an organization here in the last few years, there's been so many there's been so many skeptical moves that we've talked about, and even more than we've talked about in this segment. And then I think you add on to that and go, wait, how much longer is he going to go anyways? I think most people that know him think it's only going to be a year or two more anyway. So do you really want to go all in, trade assets to get Bill Belichick, and then he retires after next season? I don't think that's the right move either.
He wants to catch Don Shula.
Yeah.
That's widely believed.
Yeah.
But you're right. Are you getting a 10-year commitment? But again, you say, like, look at the Buccaneers. They just want to fill their stadium. Their stadium was empty yesterday.
Yeah.
They just want people in the stadium.
Yeah.
And they've chased big names in the past.
Yes, they have.
And if it doesn't work out, we'll go chase another big name in the future. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, the Raiders move Antonio Pierce to 2-0. We'll talk about Sunday Night Football when PFT Live continues right after this.
Self-inflicted wounds, same story as the last couple weeks. We got to figure out how to stop shooting ourselves in the foot when we get those opportunities. Thought the offense moved the ball really well. Had 5 shots in their territory, came away with 4 field goals. You're just not going to win football games.
Robert Saleh, coach of the Jets after last night's 16-12 loss. When Tony Dungy said that Saleh had told him first 1-20 wins, somebody said, well, they can play 2 games? Nobody's getting 20 points last night.
I had 12-10 Jets.
The Jets had a shot at getting 20 if they had scored on the Hail Mary and gone for two for some reason, which they wouldn't have done. But regardless, they had an opportunity. They've had a couple of games that came down to a Hail Mary. The game against the Patriots where the ball was almost caught. Yeah. Right? It glanced off of Garrett Wilson's shoulder and was almost caught by Randall Cobb. That one was – it was still kind of close.
Oh, it was. First off, it was some throw here.
Oh, it was
to
great.
Be running left out of bounds and throw the ball 60 yards down the field across your body that way.
Using the umpire as a pick on the way, which is very savvy. But, yeah, that's a – you know, that wasn't crazy. And that we'd have led the show with the Jets miraculously beating the Raiders in the latest edition of the Heidi game. And they're 5-4. And look at that. There's an opportunity there. It's just when those games end with a Hail Mary that fails, it's so abrupt. And I almost wish that they would, like, let's show five angles of it. Let's look for interference. Like, why do you have to go? I know the game's over and they're waiting for the late local news, but let's see. You know, that's a compelling moment. That is just, oh, well, game over, see you later. See you next week for Broncos-Vikings. Yeah. That's not a criticism. Everybody does it that way.
Yeah.
It happened with the Buccaneers-Bills game a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
It's just so abrupt.
It's just done, and it's gone.
It's like, what just happened?
Well, people only make noise about it when they think there's defensive pass interference, right? That's the other problem, too. Like, right there, I'd go, well, Garrett Wilson just climbed over the guy on the Raiders' back.
It wasn't quite like Golden Tate in the Fail Mary game. But
like, nobody ever complains about that. And everyone goes, well, the offensive player just did that. But the Jets, Robert Saleh said it, right? There was some encouraging things on the offense. Zach Wilson's late-game interception was a killer. That really hurt, right? They moved the ball. He threw the ball well. Pretty consistently through the night, but they can't score freaking touchdowns, the New York Jets. And then their run game, you know, it's just too few and far between. Zach Wilson leading the team in rushing, which he has a number of times this year, but that was a bad moment right here if you're watching. You know, driving the ball, look good, you know, certainly have a chance to maybe take some shots in the end zone and Mrs. Lazard on a little just like stick route, and Spillane does a good job of just reading his eyes the whole way. So that was a big moment in the football game. And the Jets defense, we were talking during the break too, they got to be disappointed too. Let Josh Jacobs and that offense run through you guys like that in the second half of the football game. Special teams gave up a big return. So people blame Zach Wilson, but there's other issues there too.
I think at a certain point that defense just can't keep going.
No,
when the offense
the dam
isn't
breaks.
Doing anything, you just get to a point where it's like, we just can't do this. We can't hold this any longer.
Yep.
Something's got to give offensively. And what could give, Aaron Rodgers told Melissa Stark he's targeting mid-December. I was fishing around about this yesterday. I mean, basically, it's got to happen by week 15 or it's not going to happen. Yeah. And they got to be 8-6 or 7-7 then. And right now they're 4-5 and they got the Bills and the Dolphins coming up. They could be 4-7.
Yeah.
2 weeks from now. We got to take a break. Our 92nd Monday Night Football preview, if we have that much time, when PFT Live continues right after this. Monday Night Football, Denver Broncos at the Buffalo Bills. The Jenga Tower, will it be standing tonight? Boy, they lose to the Broncos. They got a problem. But the Broncos have had 15 days to get ready.
Yep.
They beat the Chiefs the last time we saw them. There's a little swagger, a little bounce in the step, a little confidence. Hey, it's football, it's on TV, and we're getting into the weeks where you start thinking, oh, crap, it's going to be gone.
Yeah.
We got to enjoy these Mondays and
Thursdays.
We're
past the halfway point, right?
Yeah.
I know. This is still, like we talked about to start the show, it's Sean Payton, it's Russell Wilson, it's all that extra time. You know, it's recalibration, right? You're catching the Bills kind of, not playing their best football. Vance Joseph and the Broncos defense had played good right before the three games before the bye. Right? Russell Wilson's been taking care of the football. The Bills, the offense, it's a little all over the place. We know the defense with the injuries is not quite as stout. I think they're going to make it uncomfortably close.
Sean Payton was talking about this on Saturday. For him, Monday Night Football is a big deal, and I think he's trying to make it a big deal for the players, too.
Yeah, right.
So that gives him a little something.
Definitely. At home in Buffalo, be crazy.
See you tomorrow morning. Enjoy the games.
See ya.
Or game.